Welcome to Let's Talk,
Indigenous News.
Brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Danny Tears Johnson.
Yama, yama, yama. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk. Beautiful Monday morning out there. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I'd like to pay my respect to elders past and present, and that extends all across this beautiful black nation to wherever you're listening today. Today on Let's Talk, we are talking to Deadly Science founder Corey Tutt. We've got an amazing exclusive announcement here for you in AAA Murray Country. Deadly Science started after Corey found out that remote schools were often critically under-resourced. Don't we know that well? Deadly Science is a charity that provides science resources, mentoring and training and remote and regional schools across Australia with a focus on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. The passionate STEM champion, we're going to talk about STEM, was named the 2020 New South Wales Young Australian of the Year and Human Rights Hero by the Australian Human Rights Commission. And he's only a young fella. Talk about packing it in. Corey, welcome to the show, brother. First of all, your mob and your country, please.
Yama, and my mob is the Gamilaroi mob, and my country at the moment is the Biripi country up in the Port Macquarie way.
And, Bruce, before we get into the big announcement, just tell us what is Deadly Science and a little bit about yourself, because you've only been around for a few years, but, geez, you've packed in a lot in that time.
Yeah, well, Deadly Science is it's a STEM charity that I founded in Redfern, actually, when I was working in the science industry, and I really wanted to give back to my people and, empower kids, because, we often tell mob that you're only successful if you're good at sport or art, but actually black fellas are talented in all different areas, and for me, our people are the first scientists. We're the oldest living culture in the world. We have the oldest man-made structures on the planet. We're the mob. Our First Nations people invented bread in Australia. We looked to the stars and predicted the weather. And for me, I really wanted to teach our kids that and teach them that they could be scientists. And, Albert Einstein, Thomas Edison, they're a bit gammon, a bit womba. And I'm sick of seeing them in books, because our people, our elders, are PhD holders in science. They have the knowledge. And for me, I really wanted to encourage kids to not let predetermined bias be their determining factor in their lives, and they can take control, and science is for them and STEM is for them. So I googled like most weirdos and started yarning with these remote schools and just found out they're under-resourced. And you're a bit crazy when you go and drop $1,000 at Dimex. But for me, that's how it started. And
really,
my family, sorry?
That's how it started for you. You just went and dropped $1,000 because you just wanted to give.
Yeah, just wanted to give. And then working a second job when I started. So I worked at the Pet Hotel in Sydney, and I worked as a lab manager, and I did heaps of overtime, kept getting in trouble for doing too much overtime. And all that money went back into the mob and the communities. And for me, I absolutely loved it. I didn't actually employ myself till June last year with Deadly Science because I work the best job in the world. I get to yarn, and I can talk underwater cards with marbles in my mouth. So,
well, that's good because you've got the whole hour to fill.
Yeah, well, I can just yarn. I'm so lucky because I get to yarn with so many different people, so many different cultures. I get to share moments that not a lot of people get to share because of this thing called Deadly Science. And they say that our people love sport and art, but I reckon science is probably up there at the top because we all kind of like STEM and technology, and our people were the first, STEMologists in this world.
We have such a connection with the land and such a love for it, and that's where science first began, is us looking at the land. So, we are the first scientists, and that extends today.
Yeah, for sure. And even now, again, it's not a past tense thing. Mob are still working in science. Mm. They might not wear lab coats. And for non-Indigenous folk, the things that we see, we all see white middle-aged men wearing lab coats, but a lab coat is not defined by gender, sex or race. It's defined by the person doing the science. So for me, we're all, it's really funny, you know, where all good conversation starters happen, Kaz, is, you know, some bozo on Twitter said, oh, if your people are such great scientists, how come you didn't wear lab coats? So I started sending the kids lab coats. Make it easy for him.
Oh, dear. Yeah, really? Your people didn't wear lab coats. We had a giant lap that we sort of used back in the day, I recall. No, gammon. But, yeah, it must be really interesting when you get these comments, Corey, and you just, like, roll your eyes, but then instead of just, you know, being frustrated, you actually go and do something positive about it.
Yeah. I mean, for me...
Which is the best answer and the best medicine, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Ewan country, so I grew up in Nowra. I grew up in Dapto. Grew up in a lot of different places, Tumby Bay.
Some tough mob down there in Ewan country.
Oh yeah,
they're a great people, the Ewan.
But you know, like it wasn't easy for me. Like growing up, I didn't have a lot, and everything that people could possibly say to me, I've already heard, so it doesn't really, bother me.
Yeah, I get that. Before we get into this big announcement, you know. Science always wasn't there in front of you. You found it. You overcome, you know, a fair bit of trauma and adversity in your life. You've actually got a crazy little Wikipedia bio. But one of the things here is that you began your career as a zookeeper on the New South Wales South Coast down there in Ewan country, then spent time as an alpaca shearer travelling throughout Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, well, what happened with that was really interesting. My dream was to become a zookeeper, and I was told by my careers advisor at 16 that, you know, animals wasn't for me and science wasn't for me and I should stick to a trade or I'd end up dead.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Careers advisors.
Kind of like, you know, I've always been a bit of a, like, I wouldn't say I'm a fighter, but I've always been a bit, I never really take no for an answer. If I knew it was wrong, I would just, you know, I was taught to be respectful but always challenge it because, you know, my grandfather taught me when I was young that you never let anyone put limitations on you. The greatest limitations in life are those you put on yourself. And for me, I was really stubborn, so I just went, nah, I'm going to Western Australia, and I left home at 16 and went to this place called Boy Upbrook in Western Australia on Noongar country. And then when I came back, I worked at this place called Nowra Wildlife Park, and it was a little bit like Tiger King, I must admit, but it was all right.
Tiger Jill.
It was good for me. But I ended up, I had some personal tragedy there, and my best mate passed away, unfortunately, and saw an ad in the Illawarra Mercury for an alpaca handler. I'm like, well, cuz I'm handling a 4-metre crocodile, picking up snakes, holding lace monitors.
Alpacas, right? How hard can an alpaca be?
Oh, well, the first alpaca I ever saw, it was masculinely named Pikachu, headbutted me in the face and cracked my cheekbone. That's why I wear glasses pretty much as well. So, it wrecked me. But the moment
I don't mean to laugh, cuz, but, you know, Gomeroy humour, like, pretty funny. But must have hurt, bruss.
It did hurt, and my grandfather actually, before he passed away, was laughing at me because he was a shearer himself, and he was, he thought I'd be shearing sheep, and then when I told him I was shearing alpacas, he kind of just laughed, and he's like, what's an alpaca? and then he sort of passed, and then he passed away, and you know, I kept shearing, but a moment I realised I was resilient. Was I had a broken cheekbone, but I kept shearing alpacas. I kept going to work, and the guy who teaches me how to shear just said, "Oh, why don't you just have a week off? You know, recover." And I didn't really want a week off. I kind of just wanted to keep going. So, you know, for me, I did the shearing for a while, and then I started working in the animal shelters, and that's where I met my wife. So she picked me up from a pound because I'm a dog.
Stray dog.
And then I started working in labs, and I started studying and doing bits and pieces here and there, and that's how I sort of got into science. It was a bit weird because that's kind of what happened. It's a bit of a weird way to get into science, but I went kind of the long way around.
Yeah, but us black fellas, we all go on different journeys. And that's one of the things I love about our people, Brian. You talk about resilience. I think we own that word just quietly. But many of us have different childhoods and bringing ups and growing ups, and we all have a different trajectory in life and you know, follow a path. And I was a bit like you. My career counsellor back at high school told me I was probably going to end up in jail, and that's not a lie.
No.
Because I was a bit of a class clown and so forth, but... I got told I was going to jail. I just thought, wow, that's pretty hectic. We could almost do a special on career guidance, but, you know.
And I bet you won an award too.
I did. but, you know, we could laugh about career guidance counsellors for days, but, you know, we all end up in these different places, and it just shows the beauty and the tenacity of our people to follow our passion and follow our intelligence and heart. To go from one place to another, and it's just a remarkable thing that we do as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
You want to know something weird?
Please tell me.
Yes, yeah, so I went back to my old school where I where I got told that, and I got put in the Hall of Fame there.
Oh, really?
Which is unbelievable, but, you know, like, on the wall where my photo sits now, there's Bob Fulton. I think it was
The great Manly.
Yep. They're all white footballers, but, like, we've had so many deadly black fellas come out of Dapto and Darawal country and Ewan country. And it was, and for me, I just reflected on it, and I was pretty, you know, I'm very proud, but I think that we've come a long way since, you know, back then it was 2008, and, you know, this stuff is still around. It wasn't that long ago. It's still around today. There's still people out there getting told that they can't do things because of their race or their gender or their upbringing. And then the problem for that is, you know, if Deadly Science or me, and even if you think I'm a gammon seller or stink or whatever, if I can teach kids to, you know, to overlook those boundaries and do stuff that, you know, that they want to do. You know, we all have two ingredients for a cousin. It's passion and purpose, you know, and that's what we need.
Yeah, no, and it, you know, such a driving force, and we'll talk about that soon. But I just want to get to this announcement now, brother.
Yeah.
I was going to put in a drum roll sound, but I don't. I'm trying to get to number sevens recorded to clap together for a drum roll, so we can keep everything cultural here on AAA Murray Country.
Did Morrison cut your budget again?
Every year, Kaz. Every year.
But look, can't afford the drum roll anymore.
No, I want a number seven rather. The two boomies together. but now let's get into it. Let's talk about this big announcement. Just amazing. I've been keeping my powder dry all weekend for you, and I know The Guardian tried to scoop us this morning, but I want to thank you. You said, Carls, I'll keep this as an exclusive for AAA Murray Country, and we can tell the Black Nation all about it here this morning. But tell us about the partnership between Deadly Science and Formula One team McLaren.
Well, it started off in a weird way. I was getting married a month ago, and
Congrats.
Oh, I'm surprised too, cuz. It's a bit of a shock. But for me, I'm glad she turned up. But for me, I was on LinkedIn, and some guy just randomly messaged me and said, "Can you come meet me at 11 o'clock at night?"
Really?
I said, "No." And he's like, "Oh, no, you really want to come to this meeting? We've got a proposal for you." So anyway, I came to the meeting, and they showed me that they were going to put Deadly Science's logo on this McLaren. And I said, "But what is this going to mean for?" It's all well and good to have the logo on the car, and that's great. But what are you going to help me do so I can make sure that these kids get resources that they deserve? And they decided that Smartsheet was the mob that donated the sponsorship. But they said that, you know, they didn't want to do anything tokenistic. So I said, "Well, why don't you come over to Australia and I'll take you down to Redfern and you meet everyone." And we did that. We went down and met everyone. And I said, "A camera doesn't come out until you've met everyone and you do it genuinely and you build relationships. That's how we do it." And they did. They came out to their credit. And for me, the most important thing with all of it was that the kids directly benefit from this opportunity. So I made sure that McLaren people, when I spoke to them, I said, "This isn't just a, you know, you stick our label on your car and you're coming here and you're building relationships and you're going to help us actually, you know, do good work in the community. And for me, I also, so I did a bit of work with Cabbage Tree Island, and originally we were going to get the McLaren guys to come out and go to Cabo Island on Bundjalung country, but unfortunately the floods flooded Cabo Island, but we were able to get them a bus, we were able to do different things. They weren't involved in that, but they, for me, that like they got to know.
You bought them a bus, didn't you? Just to clarify, you
bought them a bus, yeah. Dion Anderson is the principal there, Aunty Dion, and you know, they were showing her so much respect and you know, reaching out to her if she needs anything and things like that. So they were in it for the right reasons. That's why we did it. And for me, they decided as well, which wasn't part of the deal or anything like that, was inside the halo of the car, where they have the driver footage, they decided to put Deadly Sciences logo in there too, because they really believe in the relationships, because I made sure that they met the people that they're benefiting, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. I've just got a little grab here from Daniel Ricciardo. He's the Australian driver of the F1 team, McLaren. Quite a good dude by the sounds of it, but I've just got a little bit of audio here to play, Corey.
Can I claim him as my cousin now?
Yeah, he Gomeroi Bray. He's from Walgett, eh? He's from Walgett.
Yeah, he's from Walgett.
Let's play this little grab from him.
We had a sponsor ask a simple question: what can a logo on a car actually accomplish? Our new sponsor, Smartsheet, came up with a crazy idea. So at the Australian Grand Prix, they're removing their logos from our cars and replacing it with a non-profit, Deadly Science. Smartsheet saw the logos on the McLaren F1 car as an opportunity to tell the world about work that matters.
Yeah, and it is work that matters. And, you know, how does it feel, Kaz, to get such global coverage, to be able to share your work? And it is work that matters. And to see that, you know, the Deadly, Deadly Science logo, it's just a brilliant thing, brother.
Yeah, it's, for me, like, it's a bit surreal. When I, like, you know, I got given a Young Australian of the Year award when, like, not just after I started, but I'd worked really hard to, you know, to build Deadly Science into something that Mob could be proud of, you know, and that meant that, you know, when kids saw my Deadly Science logo, or they, you know, they, you know, benefited from Deadly Science, they own Deadly Science, you know, and the community owns Deadly Science. Whether we like it or not, we, which we don't love it, but, you know, they own Deadly Science. And for me, to see it on a car, and you know, we don't always get the fair rub of the stick when, you know, we're not really those organisations that peter to governments, or, like, you know, that want to look good in front of a corporate. You know, we're just grassroots, and we want kids everywhere to have resources they deserve, and it's not defined by race or gender and things like that. So for me, I wanted to make sure that these kids just had things that they needed. So for me to see it on an international scale, and, like, it's going to spark conversations for this country that's hopefully going to make some of these people in power that decide, you know, who gets funding and what gets funded actually move a bit. Yeah. You know, I want them to move a bit so they fund more grassroots organisations. So, like, let's stop our kids going to jail. Let's stop them dying young. Let's work together to solve these issues at a grassroots level. Not give some gammon person, you know, $13 or $2 million to, you know, look good on a piece of paper. I want to use this to change the future, because we need to support more grassroots organisations working with our young ones.
Yeah, 100%. And it's great that you do the real legwork early on with these organisations, like telling them not to bring the camera out, these sorts of things to engage properly. It lays the great foundation for a partnership going forward, and it's something we always do in journalists. In journalism, the good black ones don't get the cameras or anything out. They'll just sit there and talk for mob for half an hour before they do anything. And it's just a beautiful way to engage and set up a great partnership going forward. I just want to touch on Walgett, brother. Your big connections there, or your Walford family out there. Shout out to the mayor, Uncle Cab.
Shout out, Uncle Cab.
We saw again on the weekend Walgett probably villainised in the mainstream media again. I wrote a comment that the stories around Walgett High School and the issues there have been written about for 20 years but have never been fixed, because while everyone wants to write about the community and what's going on in the school, nobody wants to listen to the elders who, you know, we know have the solutions. How do you find it with your work with Deadly Science, going into schools and engaging? And how has the mainstream mob treated you guys going in? Because when I used to work in schools, I used to love working with the challenging young fellas. I was one of them, bro.
Yeah, for me, like, I've never been on a Channel 7 or a 9 News or anything like that. Like, this is the difference, right? A non-Indigenous guy wins Young Australian, the East New South Wales, gets a full feature on Channel 9 News, but they don't put me on there, you know? And for me, it's about, the thing with our mob, right, and this is the thing that they do, and they're still perpetrating violence against us. Even 230 years after, you know, they said that they stopped doing it, they're still doing it. And the reason why they're doing it is because every time you turn on a TV, every time you open up a newspaper, that's a mainstream newspaper, all you see is negative crap about our people and our young kids. And they read that too. And they feel shame about it. Mm. And they feel angry. And that is... And for me, that's what I do with Deadly Science, because we know when we work in community, there's actually a lot of good stories. You know, you don't see, okay, there might be one kid in the classroom that's violent or whatever, but what about the other 19 that aren't, you know, that aren't endorsing that behaviour, or they're standing up for their teacher, or they're, you know, they're going to school and they're trying their guts out, trying to make something for themselves with very little resources.
Yep.
They're the things that the people don't see, you know, and it's really easy to sell a black story with a kid that's, you know, made a mistake and being killed by coppers, or that story about Walgett being violent or whatever. It's easier to sell that than it is to sell the story of the kid being deadly at school. And, you know, maybe they're working at Macca's and they're paying, like, I know a young girl that works at Macca's and she's the main breadwinner of her family. She's 15 years old.
Yep.
You know, like,
go and write that story.
Yeah,
you know,
why aren't we telling that? You know, and to me, like, that's why I love what I do, because I get to break that mold, and hopefully, you know, by breaking that mold, we can force these guys to actually change some of the way they report on stories. You know, if they're fair dinkum about reconciliation and things like that, then they need to tell the good stories about our people, not just the bad.
Yeah, because they're still writing stories from a 1980s sort of lens. Like, I was shocked on the weekend. I was like, you're still writing this crap, really? And just victimising these little small communities out west, and it's just a mirror for the rest of the country, what's going on. But the work that you do is so important, you know, when you're going to schools, because they're probably not getting, you know, this beautiful black education around STEM and science. Do you find that the kids love it when you go in? And on top of that, Corey, why STEM for you, bro? Why STEM for our mob in particular?
So I'll tell you a yarn. I went up to Batu Island I absolutely, you know, I'll forever remember this. When I'm an old man and I'm sort of retired and I'm sitting, you know, down and I talk about my life or whatever, this is something I'll remember forever. But I went up there and I didn't have any expectations because, when you go to a new community, you don't know how you're going to be taken and things like that. So, you know, I sat down and I listened to a few of the elders, and then I said, I brought some STEM kits up to Batu and the Torres Strait. And for me, it was almost like I was the Foo Fighters, you know, rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins. But it was like 18-hour days where kids are just banging on windows, getting so excited about science. And then I did something that I really loved, and I did the first ever Dr. Carl Triple J show from Batu Island in the Torres Strait. And no one noticed. No one really noticed. Like, the people that mattered noticed, but no one really noticed that, you know, this had never happened before. And we got a traditional welcome done from Batu Island in the Torres Strait on Triple J to over 200,000 listeners.
You.
And for me, it wasn't tokenistic. It was like, this is the science that we're sharing. And STEM for me means everything. All of us everywhere have the potential to be a scientist, you know, or do deadly science. And for me, it's every wake of our being. It's the stories we tell. It's the culture. It's the dance. It's the, you know, it's the sharing of knowledge. It is the technology of creating that tool that's going to feed you, you know. It's everywhere we are, it is all STEM. Even the gammon mob that say we're only good at sport and art, you need some form of STEM to be a good AFL footy player or even a rugby league player or even a boxer. So,
yep.
You know, all that comes into science.
Start getting into physics and all those sorts of things.
And, the problem is that most people don't even know they're doing it. You and I right now are using technology to communicate, but we're also using chemistry, you know. The hypothesis of the words, is that you're hopefully going to like what we do, and the risk is that you might not, and that's okay. I think that that's the science of it all, and our elders are the best scientists, and because they teach us this from birth all the way up to when we become elders, and I think that that's the thing that I love the most about Deadly Science. I've learned more about science working with blackfellas than I have working with Dr. Carl or any professor.
That's great, man. I love hearing that. Do you find that, you know, the way that we look at science and STEM in schools is changing from what you're seeing with the younger generation? Back when I was in high school, it was almost, you know, there was the nerds and the jocks and, you know, sport versus, you know, science sort of thing. And if you seemed to be smart, it was a bit uncool. And, you know, some people would hide their intelligence at school and fail a maths test or a science test on purpose because they didn't want to seem uncool. Do you think that's changing now? Geez, I hope so.
I think it is changing. It's changing a lot because, for the first time, we've actually got blackfellas science books now. Like, I wrote a book, but we've got other books as well. Like, they're coming out. Like, you know, there is some holes in Dark Emu, but it's still a great book. It's a book that's changed the conversation. It's turbocharged it.
Yeah, it has.
And the good thing is that non-Indigenous people, the good ones, the allies, are interested in our culture because they feel saddened about what happened to our people. They feel sad for themselves because, you know, that what they've lost too. They've lost an ability to learn something other than what's been told to them. And I think that for me, it is changing. It's changing a lot but it needs to change even more. And we all know that.
Mm.
But the thing that's good is that, you know, no longer are people, like, you know, people aren't finding it acceptable anymore to be racist. You know, people are getting called out for it. So I'm stoked that, you know, that we're getting more opportunity to these kids. Like, you know, Cuban Island school, right, they had no Lego on their school, like, and this is in Torres Strait. And there's a lot of schools like this.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, to put Lego in their school, put a microscope in their school is a no-brainer. Like, it's dumb that isn't even a thing. Like, it's dumb that the schools that don't have any resources.
I'll just read out something here. Sorry, just to catch you off, Corey, but I just want to talk about the impact you guys have had, just to add to what you're saying. Sorry, brother,
yeah.
But 7,500 boxes of resources sent out to schools and communities, 180 communities in total, 100 schools in total. You've sent out 25,000 books to all these mob, and you've sent out 700 telescopes to schools and communities. Now, when I was a little fella, bro, the telescope was the maddest thing to be able to look up to the stars and just look at microscopic things and whatnot. It's just, it's just what you're doing is quite phenomenal. Where do you get all this stuff from and how do you go about, I guess, getting people like Lego to donate valuable resources to, you know, communities that just don't get this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and the thing is that starts a conversation. It starts a conversation with elders and also kids, and they have a learning experience together, but they also have a knowledge sharing experience. And for me, to actually put something, in community like that, that is going to last a long time. You know, a telescope doesn't go away just on its own, you know. And for me, I absolutely like it. Like, I put a greenhouse in Walgett too, you know, and that's a, like, that's something that I hope that kids learn how to grow food so it reduces the cost of fresh food. You know, I heard Mornington Island mentioned earlier, and, you know, I've seen it myself, and I've seen our young people die in it. But if we can put the knowledge in their hands and the resources to actually change it, then they can change the future for our people, and they're the deadliest. Yeah. I think that we're so lucky. We're so lucky to come from the first people of this country. And
we are lucky, eh, bro? We are lucky, eh?
Very lucky. We're so lucky, and we're so lucky at a time, because for our older people, they changed it for us. But now we're in a position where we can start influencing change for our kids and our grandkids. And that's the thing that I'm really passionate about. I think it's going to be really great.
Yeah, I think simple things like just growing your own food, setting up greenhouses. I remember when Costa the gardener came up to Kakadu when I was working up there many years ago. And we set
old
up...
Old Costa.
the old bearded Costa. You're a good fella, bro. But you're funny, lad. But we started growing food up there, like native products and all that, because it was about $8 for a single tomato at the shopping centre there, right?
This is out $8.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, it was a ridiculous amount of, you know, we're in Kakadu. We weren't even that remote compared to other remote communities, right? And so the cost of food there, we're just like, this is just 1950s, you know, this is just unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So we started growing food and that as well. And it just brings the community together. People get healthier. They get a bit more bungu in their pocket, a bit more money, things like that. So, you know, I love seeing all these scientists and mob gardeners all get together and do these great community activities. But talking about great activities for kids, can you tell us about the book First Scientists? Deadly Inventions and Innovation from Australia's First People. And I know you've done a few different books, Cas, with animal adaptations and things like that. Talk us about through the books, and these are amazing because I couldn't have dreamed of seeing this sort of stuff in schools when I was there, bro.
I got sick of sending books with white fellas on them.
True story.
I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd write a book. When I decided to write a book, it was more of a, you know, I think that it wasn't done out of like, oh, I'm going to write a book and, you know, become rich and deadly and all these sort of things. And it was more, we seriously need a book that is going to communicate to our kids and non-Indigenous kids about the true history of STEM in this country. And whether that is, you know, whether that's, you know, follow an ant, so because the ants can tell you when it's about to rain, or it's, you know, it's the resins that our people use for tools and things like that. For us, it's about starting the conversation. And if a non-Indigenous kid picks it up and then, you know, is doing culture in their school with an AO or an Aboriginal officer or an elder, you know, let's start the conversation where the non-Indigenous kid asks about, you know, about some of the stuff that we've got in the community, or like, you know, let's change the world. Let's get a book that kids can see themselves in. Let's talk about the present as well. Let's talk about the young kids in community now picking up bilby samples, mm-hmm. and they're helping map out the genome for the bilby. You know, that's a big, big bit of work, and there's now deadly scientists are doing that. So for me, I think that I really want young people to see themselves in the book and learn a bit in the books, but also have books that are going to help change the world for us. So I think that that's why I wrote the books, not out of any, you know, any monetary thing or any notoriety. I just really wanted to make deadly books for deadly black fellas.
It's just deadly all around, cuz. It's just amazing to hear. And like I said, like, there's so many of us that love science that were forced into sports. But now this has all come back, and it's just, you know, as a parent, it's really heartwarming to hear all this sort of stuff that's going on in our schools and in our communities, you know. So, geez, I thank you for your work, brother. It's just, you can tell you love it. You can tell your passion. I reckon you just bounce out of bed just going, let's do some science today.
I'm like, you know, I'm so, you know, like I said, I'm the luckiest man in the world. You know, they talk about these fellas, Jeff Bezos, you know, Richard Branson, Elon Musk, and how rich they are and how, you know, how they're going to space and all this stuff, but they fail in comparison, brother, to how I feel every day, because I get to work with kids all over and young people, and, you know, I get to actually, you know, snap these pre-conscious biases and hopefully change the world for these people so that they can empower the next generation. I think that's, yeah, you can't get much better than that. You, every single day you get to live that kind of stuff. Mm. You know, it's special, and you can never take it for granted.
And there's so many amazing black women in STEM. I used to work with Ray Johnston. Ray taught me so much about STEM. I had a young scientist in here last week. Her name was Eden Little. She's studying the Gumby plant to find cure for cancers. I've always, you know, you're one of the first brothers I spoke to in STEM. It's our sisters and our aunties in STEM are really leading the way.
Oh, yeah, you know, totally. And, you know, Ray and Carly Noon.
Carly Noon is fantastic. Carly Noon is fantastic. I see her on ABC Breakfast some mornings, and she's just amazing.
Yeah, and she's got a real respect for the culture too. Like, there's a lot of, you know, the things for us is that, like, we can only talk about what we're allowed to talk about. Carly shares it in such a way that is so respectful to the mob and the community. And I'm just really proud of old Noonie. She's real good.
Old Noonie,
And old Carly Noon. She's really good. She's, and there's a lot of deadly people in there. So great.
Yeah, and I'll be reaching out to her soon and get her on the show, because I want to build up a deadly group of black scientists that can come on the show and share all this work and the knowledge, because it's just so inspiring and it's just so great for non-Indigenous Australia to hear this as well, all the work that we're doing, because, you know, this is really the intersection of culture and Western science, and it's happening right in front of our eyes.
We're in a really interesting time, but, you know, one of the things I want to do is I want to develop eDNA kits, which is, touch DNA. So basically you can take a drop of water or soil, mm-hmm. and you can test what animals have touched that soil or water. And for me, I want our young people doing that and leading that. So there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff coming, I reckon.
No, we'll keep coming back to us, but I just want to, I'll wrap it up soon, brother. I know you've got a lot on, and you've got a big day ahead with the McLaren partnership. But what's the vision for Deadly Science in 5 years? You know, as you look to the future, where would you like to be, bro? I'm thinking about the first black fella astronaut in space here. I could see Deadly Science launching that. We could have our own rockets, black fellas in space. I'm just all about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for me, the best news for me would be that I'm not CEO of Deadly Science. And my role's redundant, and one of my deadly scientists is now the CEO of Deadly Science, and is forging their own path with this organisation. But if that isn't the case, then I want to eliminate STEM poverty in this country. I want it to be a dark, distant memory that we look back on and think, thank God we're not in this stage where kids in remote communities don't have access to STEM. You know, let's snap that. Let's change that, you know, and then let's force these bureaucrats, these people that are in power, to look at the little people in community and make them as tall as what they are. And for me, I'm desperate to make sure that our communities are heard and they have the access to the things that they need. So if it's not me, I hope it's another deadly scientist that's in charge of deadly science and is making it, you know, the best thing possible, and putting their own, you know, their own sort of taste on it. Because, you know, I think for me, you know, not-for-profits like Deadly Science can become stale if you have the same sort of people, you know, running the show for a long time, and it becomes about them, not about the charity. So, I hope that one day I'm redundant.
Yeah, because stagnant water just ends up with a lot of algae, brother, and it's unbelievable to think that there is STEM poverty in this country. We're one of the richest, most developed nations in the world, but we know that the challenges that are out there in our communities, and don't get me wrong, people, remote communities are here in the city as well. I know a lot of, you know, schools that are isolated in the cities and don't get many resources whatsoever. So getting this stuff out is very challenging, but we understand it, don't we, bro?
Can I tell you a yarn?
Go on. I love it when you tell me a yarn, Corey.
So I went to Redfern Durham College, which is right in the heart of Sydney, and I looked at their library and I donated about 90% of the books they had there. I could pick out each book and be like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I sent you that one. I sent you this one. and, you know, just because you're in a city doesn't mean that you don't have these biases as well. I mean, it's worse in remote communities.
Yeah.
For some remote communities don't even have good books or even, like, you know, microscopes, Lego, things like that. And, you know, for me, I was so, yeah, just so... yeah, I'm so pleased, you know, I can see that. And I go up to Batu Island and the Torres Strait and I can notice the books that I've, donated as well.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be there otherwise. And, you know, it's a bit of a blight on our education system that this isn't happening and we're not being looked after despite being tax-paying, you know, good Aussie citizens. But, you know, the work that you do, brother, and your team there at Deadly Science, it's just phenomenal. It's so inspirational.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show today and sharing the news of your partnership with McLaren.
Yep.
We can't wait to see what Deadly Science does next and what you inspire next. If mob out here are listening now, where can I find Deadly Science? Where can I find out what they do? Where can they go, bro?
Jump on the socials, you deadlies. jump on deadlyscience.org.au. Chuck us an email. You can find it just about everywhere.
Now, this is Corey Tutt, deadly fellow of Deadly Science, doing amazing things for our community. I've got a little song dedication for you today, brother. It's called Cow Call by Troy and Dean Brady. The song's all about home, and that's all you do is give back to your home country. So we thank you, Corey. Keep going, brother, and thanks for joining us here on AAA Murray Country.